Hi, everyone. Welcome to Flock Talk. I'm Aaron Morgan.
And I'm Tom Lewis.
And we work for the farmer members of the Ontario Sheep Farmers Organization.
This week, the topic is marketing, and we will be interviewing Matthew Rowe with the Canadian Campaign for Wool.
Welcome, Matthew.
Thank you.
Can you tell us a little bit about the Campaign for Wool and for those who might be hearing about it for the first time?
Yeah, so the Campaign for Wool was created globally by our patron, His Majesty King Charles III. And so it was launched globally in 2010, and then it came to Canada, was launched by then the Prince of Wales and Duchess of Cornwall on a windy pier in Pictou, Nova Scotia in 2014. So 9 years ago, and we're coming up on, so 2024 will be our 10th anniversary in Canada. So again, but we are part of this global network with its origins, all starting with His Majesty.
So recently there was a meeting of the International Wool Textile Organization in Montreal, and thank you for the invitation. It was a great event to attend. This was the first time the meeting was held in Canada. Can you tell us a little bit about the event and what was achieved during that meeting?
Yeah, so this is, I guess, going back a little bit, you know, what we've tried to do with the Campaign for Wool in Canada and the Canadian Wool Council is really look at what are the systemic barriers to growing and developing our wool industry. You know, the wool industry is one of the oldest industries in Canada. It goes back to the very origins of Canada itself. Wool was literally our first currency. So it's had a place in Canadian society for a very long time. It hasn't always been profitable. The industry itself has had a lot of ups and downs. When we were launched in Canada after Their Majesties kicked it off, you know, we started to look at we began, of course, as a marketing initiative, and it was all about just promoting wool as a natural, sustainable fiber. And it was looking at all wool. But the more we worked in the space, the more we heard from producers, from mill owners, that, you know, we needed to specifically focus on what we could do for Canadian wool. And so a few years ago, we invested a lot of resources into developing the industry's very first strategic plan. And that included three major goals, which was to rebrand and revalue Canadian wool, to connect the entire Canadian wool value chain, and to give Canadian wool a voice on the international stage. And it's in that third mission that the meeting you mentioned sort of falls into. So when we started to look at how we could better learn from what other similar countries were doing with their wool, we learned about the International Wool Textile Organization, which is kind of the United Nations of wool. It's the global authority for the wool trade, and everyone was there and has been there for, you know, 93 years. So you've got the biggest producers like China, Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, the United Kingdom, the United States, and then smaller producers like Germany, Italy, and on and on and on. But everyone was there except Canada. It was a major oversight that in those 93 years, Canada had actually never been a member. So what we did was we helped to secure Canada's first ever seat. And then once we were there, once we populated the working groups with Canadians and started to engage in the work of the IWTO, we started to look at, again, how we could sort of deepen that relationship. And then the opportunity came to host one of their meetings for the very first time in Canada. And we kind of leapt at that opportunity and put forward Montreal, because Montreal is the traditional sort of textile heartland of Canada. And so it was a perfect place to bring the global wool industry to. So in terms of what was achieved, you know, it was two full days of presentations. And then on either end, there were some other events and industry visits and things like that. But first and foremost, what it gave us was this was literally the global industry's first chance to see the Canadian situation on the ground, to learn about the kind of fiber our farms produce, to learn about the companies that are using Canadian wool in products, those that are using wool perhaps not Canadian, you know, but are actually, you know, global leaders in what they do. So, you know, an example of that was Montreal's own Peerless, which is probably the biggest company that that those in the wool industry have never heard of, because it's a Montreal-based clothing manufacturer, and they manufacture millions of suits every year, primarily for the American market, but also Mexico, and they are a massive company. But again, despite being in Montreal, despite being this, you know, nearly 100-year-old Canadian company, again, they've never used Canadian wool. So this was a great opportunity to not only show our wool industry capabilities to the world, but also to learn from each other. And so I think that was the other big win of those couple days in Montreal was, you know, I was saying just before we began, this is the first time that we've had this many value chain partners under one roof, and being able to have all of those people together to be hearing about the latest trends, the latest opportunities, you know, you can feel sort of a palpable energy in the room. And you don't always get that in the wool industry. You know, sometimes you can feel like you're tilting against windmills or that you're sort of a lone voice in the wilderness. So to all of a sudden be in a room that these are all the people that are doing something with wool and seeing what's working and what isn't. It was really, really inspiring. So yeah, and I think those were some of the biggest achievements. I mean, there was a lot of behind the scenes chatter in terms of deals being made, you know, people asking to buy wool, people asking to source Canadian products. So there was a lot of sort of commercial deals on the side. So we haven't quantified all of that yet. But I think first and foremost, it was awareness to the world and awareness within the Canadian industry of what we're capable of.
That is amazing. And I'm so excited to hear that. And speaking of what we're capable of, there are rumors that Canadian wool isn't very high quality. What is Canadian wool used for and how does it compare to other countries' wool?
So the... We've heard this actually time and time again. I think when we first got into this space, there was this idea that, oh, Canadian wool is worthless. That was what we were hearing from even producers. You know, it was this very, you know, the wool isn't good for anything. You know, there's no value to it. You know, we're lucky if we do get some pennies by selling it on the global commodities market. And that's that. And I think a few years back when we did our strategic plan and we brought in some of these experts from around the world, as well as from across Canada. And what we started to hear back was actually, no, you've got actually a really good micron range. You know, the bulk of what you're producing, that's good wool. And you can do a lot of good things with it. Now, that, you know, I think the way that we've sort of treated that clip in recent years hasn't been great because, again, we've sort of... it's become a sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy. And by deriding the quality of the wool, the quality has actually gone down. And then again, it just, the only places that have wanted to buy it are those that are willing to, you know, put up with its quote unquote imperfections, but then not get a lot of value for it. You know, what we were seeing at this meeting was a number of companies who've actually taken Canadian wool and have, created high value added products. So our keynote, for example, was a Montreal-based company who, you know, it's a fashion startup, but he set himself for the challenge of creating an entire line, not even just one product, but an entire line of Canadian wool products, sweaters, vests, toques, gloves, like it, all in 100% Canadian wool. And as anyone who's tried to do something like that themselves knows, it's a big challenge, but he did it. And his company has done very well as a result. We heard from a partner that the campaign has been working with out in British Columbia that is set to become the second big rug company to produce 100% Canadian wool rugs. Again, a very high value added product and not where we're looking to bring in, you know, this isn't wool that doesn't exist. This is using the median clip of what exists in Canada right now, but transforming it into a high value added product. So those were kind of some of the inspiring ideas that really, I think, you know, we've been believers for a long time now that, you know, the Canadian wool is very valuable. But if there was any doubts in our mind, those couple days in Montreal sort of wiped those fears away in terms of seeing companies that believe in Canadian wool and want to do something about it.
Thank you. And it was a great opportunity. And thank you for arranging that. The Campaign for Wool is a member of the Canadian Wool Council. Can you tell us a little bit about the Canadian Wool Council, what they do and how they're different from the Campaign for Wool?
Yeah, so the campaign, we get this question a lot. I mean, we began as the Campaign for Wool, and we began as a program of His Majesty's Canadian Charitable Office, but we were sort of one initiative. And in fact, that's how I got into this space, was I worked for then His Royal Highness, and we had a variety of charitable initiatives. And this was one that we were asked to launch in Canada. But then it really seemed to have legs, and it grew and it grew. And it still remains sort of the primary program. But once we've grown to a certain point, you know, we spun it off, pardon the pun, and the Canadian Wool Council was created to be this vehicle to move the industry forward. Again, when the campaign started, it was just primarily an educational and a marketing initiative. But the more we worked in the space, the more we saw that there was a vacuum in terms of what was required to help move the industry forward. And that's where through the Canadian Wool Council is kind of that wider umbrella that looks to, whereas, you know, again, the campaign is, you know, it's creating films, it's creating events, it's creating projects that demonstrate what's possible with wool. The Wool Council has been looking at a lot of those deeper systemic issues of how we build capacity. How do we get more Canadian wool to market? How do we build commercial partnerships that are going to maybe get some media for us in the beginning, but that are going to be viable long-term destinations for Canadian wool? They're going to pay a premium price to producers and also create a product that they can be proud of. I think part of the problem with the old system was, you know, no one was happy. You know, the producers weren't getting very much money. And it was just going into kind of it was going overseas, and you never knew what happened to it, and it was gone. You know, a priority for us has been creating these Canadian wool products that we know exactly, you know, where that wool is coming from. And it's something that the producers that are feeding into those products can justly be proud of, that this is something that's gorgeous, that's, you know, that's beautiful, that is a premium product, and that is also in some cases flying the flag for Canada. You know, our very first rug partnership, which is still ongoing with Toronto-based Creative Matters, they produce rugs for, amongst other clients, the Canadian government. And so our 100% Canadian wool rugs are now adorning floors in diplomatic missions around the world. And up until that point, again, they were still buying their rugs, but they weren't Canadian. They were being made of New Zealand and Nepalese wool. So again, just by kind of working on these little projects, all of a sudden you build an industry one brick at a time. And again, being able to create something that everyone involved in that value chain can justly be proud of.
So you spoke about some of those systemic issues and also the Canadian Wool Council's strategic plan. So how are you addressing those systemic issues in the strategic plan? Do you have a couple of examples for us?
Yeah, so one of the biggest ones that still sort of bedevils our industry is a lack of scouring infrastructure. So we have a lot of very small scale scouring in Canada, but very little sort of medium sized and no like large scale. And so that holds back a lot of our product from market. So, you know, two of the plans that we've looked at in the past 2 years, for example, one was looking at a chain for carpets, and another was looking at a chain for upholstery. And it involved temporarily outsourcing some of that scouring to facilities in other countries where the capacity is light years ahead of what Canada can do and scale. And so one of our partners actually sort of implemented that in very recently, where again, they took the model we came up with in the carpet plan, and they sent a container of Canadian wool over to the UK to a plant that is capable in 1 week of handling the entire Canadian clip. So when you have capacity like that, you can all of a sudden, you know, address some of these economies of scale of getting Canadian yarn sort of to a better price point. So that's one example. Others is just using, you know, existing infrastructure, but repurposing it for products that, you know, that people haven't thought to use. So for example, with our rugs, we source all of the wool from that, from the famous Briggs & Little Mill in New Brunswick, which is primarily known for their knitting yarns. But we source their single ply yarn, and that is used in the creation of both hand knotted and hand tufted carpets. So again, in some cases you have to find, you know, outside the box solutions. In other cases, you know, the solutions are already there. It's just about, you know, knitting a supply chain back together, or where either it had fallen apart or where it never existed. So those are some of the challenges that we're tackling. You know, looking at another big issue is around branding. So again, because we'd sort of derided our wool for so long, you know, there wasn't really a sense of what Canadian wool even was anymore. So you see that through our Fabric of Canada series, where we've created films to tell the really amazing sort of stories of the wool industry across this country, and use that in a way that's, you know, very, very visual storytelling, kind of like, you know, the Newfoundland tourism ads kind of come to mind for a lot of them, where we're capturing the flavor of Canada and sort of and presenting it in a way so that foreign buyers, customers who know nothing about Canadian wool, can leave with this impression that, no, this is a country that's been working in this space for a long time, that has a proud heritage, and that kind of knows what they're doing. And so that's one of the other areas that we're working in. So it's a lot of behind the scenes stuff, you know, about 10% of it is kind of in front of the curtain to show off to the world.
So we spoke recently about the IWTO meeting in Montreal, and at that meeting, the federal government, through the Honorable Lawrence Macaulay, announced around 185,000 for the Canadian Wool Council to continue advancing a more sustainable wool industry in Canada and spreading awareness about Canadian wool. Can you maybe speak to us about how you see this federal investment supporting the sector?
Yeah, so the area, so it's through the agri-marketing program. So first of all, thank you to the Government of Canada for once again showing their confidence that this is a space and this is an industry where they see potential and where Canada has room to grow. You know, they hadn't granted for wool for, no one seems to know when, if ever, but certainly it would have been, if they had put money in the wool industry it would have been a very long time ago. But again, it was an example of what it, you know, when you have a renewed vision, and you can bring in partners that may have said no in the past. I mean, we actually, when we got our first funding commitment 2 years ago, which, as I say, was the first that anyone could remember giving to wool in ages, we were required to sign up for the Brand Canada program as part of that. They were all confused. They actually wouldn't let us sign up for the Brand Canada program because they're like, oh, you're not an agricultural product. And we're like, yes, we are. And so like the language, the fact it was all very blinkered around, oh, no, it's only food. And so, and it's like, well, actually, no, there's many other products that come from ag that are not food, but that are also have value added. And so it was nice to see this time around, we had no trouble joining the Brand Canada initiative because they'd expanded their definition. But so I think what we've been able to do is we've been able to bring the federal government along with us for this journey of remaking the industry, and where they've made investments are in the area around branding. So obviously, they're very interested in export promotion and promoting 100% Canadian wool value-added products. So again, you know, as I mentioned, you know, in the past we were just exporting raw wool, and that's not really of interest to the government because it's a very low, there's literally no value added to that. The value is added in another country and the money is made further on down that value chain. Where they bought into our vision is looking at, you know, again, these 100% Canadian wool products that we're developing in partnership with the private sector, in partnership with with producers and mills and so forth. And they see the potential again to sell that to the world and sell and have this be a value added export product. So the a big chunk of that money is devoted to continuing our branding and marketing work, the social media, the films, you know, coming up with ways of portraying to customers abroad of just how special Canadian wool is and how amazing the products made with it are and how they speak to the story of Canada in general. The other big portion of what that federal money is to support is our work with the IWTO. So they see the value in being plugged in to the world and in supporting meetings like we had in Montreal, where we bring, you know, the grown-up table of wool to Canada and get them to learn more about that industry, but also consider investing, consider buying Canadian wool products for their stores, considering how they could fit in to a supply chain to produce more value-added Canadian products. So those are kind of the two areas where the government investment is earmarked for, is again, branding and marketing, and for developing this international relationship. And it's a lot more than just the conferences. It's also, there's a day-to-day work that goes on behind the scenes with all the different working groups, including the Interiors Working Group, which Canada chairs. But we have Canadian representation on all of the working groups. And if there is an area, which include, you know, biosecurity, animal welfare, it covers, again, the gamut of issues affecting the industry. So again, if there is an area that your members are interested in supporting or becoming involved in, we would love to hear from them. Because there's always more work than there is hands. So again, that's an area where we would love to involve more producers. But yes, to answer your question, I think those are the two key areas that the government is investing in.
Amazing. So speaking of producers and investing in producers, if producers are interested in selling their wool into a high-end market and you know they're excited by the opportunities that we've been discussing, what do producers need to do to improve the quality of their wool, or to segregate their wool, or to basically get their foot into the market that you're talking about, the higher end wool market? How do producers get involved in that?
Yeah, so it's about, you know, just the easiest bit is, you know, trying to reduce the VM, so the vegetable matter in your wool. So that comes down to how you're feeding, you know, the kind of bedding you're using. You know, trying to find ways to reduce the amount of VM in your clip when you are shearing, you know, skirting your fleeces. These are all things that they're not, you know, can be implemented fairly easily, and will get you that better price for the wool, because it means less, you know, if there's more VM, it means that there has to be a way to take it out, and that those can be expensive processes. So again, that ups the quality. When you're looking at kind of longer term solutions, you know, it's looking at the genetics of you know, as you're breeding your sheep. You know, we understand that the majority of sheep are bred for meat. But if you have an option of, you know, breeding between, you know, a sheep that otherwise are equally good on the meat side, but one has much better wool, then choose the better wool. You know, always look and see how you can be improving your micron, improving, you know, the handle. It's also important to know that there's, you know, there's different uses for different kinds of wool. So, you know, you can't hope that, you know, a Rideau Arcot is going to give you the same kind of fleece as a Rambouillet. It's just, you know, you can work on that as like a genetic project, but that's going to take a while. I think another part of it, of getting the most value, is understanding, you know, where do you want your wool to go, or where is there an opportunity, and kind of work backwards of, well, what does the carpet industry need to make kind of the best possible wool yarn, and how does that, you know, so start to talk to the manufacturers, start to talk to the scours. I think when we first got involved in this industry, we were amazed by how little people talk to each other within even adjacent points of the value chain. There was often very sort of clear lines of like, you know, you sold it and then you stopped caring about it. And with an industry as complex as wool, you know, for to be able to move it from, you know, off the sheep's back into, you know, some of these products, there's a lot of processes. So getting to know, you know, the different kinds of the strengths of the wool that you're raising. And again, what are the sorts of end uses, and kind of work backwards of how do I make it easier on those in between steps to be able to extract the most value and ensure that kind of everyone along the way can sort of make a good amount of money. I mean, and then that's, I guess that's one of the reasons why our focus has been on high value added products, because we want to, and there's a place certainly for wool that isn't suitable for any other form of use to have some lower value added applications. You know, you've seen some great initiatives around, say, you know, insulation or pelleting. But the bulk of Canadian wool is actually better. It has a lot more potential than that. And so putting it into things like carpeting, rugs, upholstery, these are even filtration. I mean, there's this amazing company in New Zealand that is doing air filtration systems that are made primarily of wool, and again, a very high value added product. But they're, you know, they're using their air filters like in space exploration, like so sheep get to go to the moon, like cool. So I mean, these are the kind of products that we you know, that we should be focusing our efforts on. So I think the first step for a producer thinking about, you know, how they can get more money for their wool is, you know, start to think about where it's going, where some of these end use cases are. And, you know, as we grow more of these product offerings, we're going to be seeking out more producers. So it becomes a virtuous cycle in terms of getting each round a clearer idea of what it is that the manufacturer needs, and therefore being able to convey that to the producer, and that they improve their product, and then thus the end product is improved, and it goes on like that. So I think, but as a first step, just thinking about how you can make your wool better, thinking about where it goes afterwards, can go a long way to getting more money, but then also setting yourself up to be able to supply some of these higher value added products.
I'm still processing sheep on the moon.
Yeah, at least their wool on the moon.
Yeah, anyway. Absolutely. So we have one final question, and we're sure you've been asked this all the time. Since you work for His Majesty's Campaign for Wool, have you met King Charles?
I have, yes. Yes, I do get this question a lot. I having worked for, as I mentioned, you know, I got into this space by working for His Majesty's Canadian Charitable Office years ago, when he was Prince of Wales. And so we had the good fortune both to greet him in Canada to show off our different programs, including the Campaign for Wool, as well as bring supporters to the UK and see some of his work there. So I've had the opportunity to meet him many times over the last decade. And what I can say is that we are so lucky to have a patron who is so passionate, who really, like, he takes sort of the, you know, 40,000 feet view of what the industry needs, but then he can dive right down to the specifics, right down to being, you know, the nitty gritty of raising sheep, because he is, in addition to being the king, he's also a sheep farmer and he has his own flocks. And so he knows sort of what it takes to raise sheep and to bring, you know, meat and wool to market, but then also, again, sees, you know, this much larger industry and the supports that it needed. I mean, when he created the Campaign for Wool in 2010, it was because he saw an environment, particularly in the fashion side of things, where, you know, you saw markets being dominated by fast fashion, which were being driven by cheap synthetic fibers being made in criminally low wage jurisdictions. Emphasis criminally is on mine, but is on my side. But again, he saw this where, again, we sort of lost touch with natural fibers and with the sort of quality that they can create, particularly wool. You know, wool garments are often very long lasting and enduring. But it had all these technical benefits. So the campaign for wool was out of this, where he saw sort of farmers, he saw mill owners sort of crying out for, you know, we need a better coordinated kind of educational campaign. And at the same time, sort of consumers sort of losing touch with, you know, fibers that have served us well since the dawn of civilization. So I think, again, us with the campaign, we are so fortunate to have a patron like that who is so engaged. I mean, I last saw him in Canada during his last visit as Prince of Wales in 2022, I believe. that 2 years, or it seems like forever ago.
I know, but the pandemic, we've lost time.
I know, I have no sense of time anymore. But it was in Newfoundland, and again, we were able to show off some of the amazing wool products we were developing. He was able to meet with a 100-year-old Newfoundland wool cooperative that we were profiling in one of our films. He was meeting with a prairie artisan who did those incredible sculptures of both him and his mother, totally needle felted with Canadian wool. Again, cool. Just a totally outside the box way of thinking what is possible with wool. So, and then he keeps regularly informed through the updates that we send him and through our global chair, Sir Nicholas Coleridge. Again, the campaign operates in 13 different countries. So it's really amazing to see sort of what he's been able to achieve. And, you know, and again, we're very fortunate to have someone with his kind of vision sort of lighting the way for us. So he's a lot of fun, I guess, is the other aside, is that he really cares about this stuff. So he gets right into it, you know, when he's chatting with the knitters. Like he wants to engage with other people who share his same passion. So he's a good boss to have.
Well, that's fantastic. And I can definitely feel your passion for the industry, which is so exciting and so infectious. And we're really happy to be working with you, Matthew, and really, really appreciate the time that you've taken today to share the wool industry with us and to give us an update on everything that the Campaign for Wool is doing. And we're really excited to be working with you at Ontario Sheep Farmers on furthering the campaign and all of the goals of the Canadian Wool Council and the Campaign for Wool. So thank you so much. And for more information about the Campaign for Wool, visit www.campaignforwool.ca.
And thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed this marketing episode with the Campaign for Wool. Join us next Wednesday for our education-themed interview with Ontario sheep producer Ted Skinner, who will talk about he and his wife's farm operation and involvement in the sheep sector. Ted is also the recipient of the 2023 Outstanding Shepherd Award.
Hey Tom, what's new?
Ontario sheep farmers recently started the Flock Talk podcast that you're listening to, a weekly podcast series bringing you ideas, insights from fellow producers, industry experts covering research, marketing, education, news, updates, and more. This podcast comes out every Wednesday, and the creation of this came from the 2021 OSF Crossroads Challenge and better connecting with Ontario sheep farmers and producers across the province. If you have suggestions for topics and discussions, you can email me, tlewis@ontariosheep.org, or Aaron Morgan, emorgan@ontariosheep.org. Thank you for listening.
If you enjoyed our podcast, please subscribe to your podcast app to receive alerts to our future episodes, and please share our podcast with your friends.
For more Ontario Sheep Farmers content, follow us on social media at Ontario Sheep Farmers, on Instagram and Facebook at Ontario Sheep, on X, formerly Twitter, and visit our website at ontariosheep.org.